Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Starbucks workers in Buffalo trying to organize and the fight they started. Today on the show, the latest from the American Federation of Government Employees and the United Auto Workers. Welcome to the Friday, November 12th edition of America's Workforce, where we are now available on six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and most recently, the platform known as Stitcher. All right, many different ways you can access this show, and many people are doing that, so we certainly do appreciate that. Arnold Scott's going to be our first guest today. He comes to us from one of our great sponsors, several years now, for the American Federation of Government Employees. This would be District 6. He is the national president, and we got a slew of things to talk about today. We're going to run down all the victories this year, and there were many. I'm going to run down four here real quick. Number one, Biden rescinding some executive orders that go back to May of 2018, which attempted to eliminate collective bargaining. Can you believe that? Also eliminate due process and workplace representation rights for federal workers. Biden appointed a new acting general counsel at the Federal Labor Relations Authority, paving the way for that agency to address a backlog of disputes. Homeland Security, a directive dealing with the Transportation Security Agency to issue new guidelines which would expand union rights for the workers. And lastly, a historic settlement reached with the Department of Veterans Affairs to restore workplace rights and overturn anti-worker policies implemented by the previous administration. So essentially, Biden unwinded a lot of what happened in those 4 years. So we'll touch on that. We'll talk about this possibility of the government running out of money. Again, the new date is December 3rd. Also, Biden directed a number of agencies, and I'll tell you, AFG is so happy about this. Biden directed the agencies to do a number of things to promote unionization in the federal government. Actually, there's six things he promoted, and we'll run that down. And a lot of people are saying, wow, we got a president of the United States that's trying to bolster union membership? How refreshing is that? So we're going to get all of that. And also federal pay, worker pay, that's been batted around for years. There's a lot, like I said, and Arnold Scott's going to cover them all as our first guest. Josh Nassar will be joining us later in the show. Another sponsor, we're talking about the United Auto Workers, and they're elated over the passage in the House on Friday night with the bipartisan infrastructure bill. This is the bill that passed the Senate with 19 Republican votes several months back. And I got a statement here I'm going to read from Ray Curry. Ray is the president of the UAW, and he said, with passage of this bill, President Biden, Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and the House Democrats have fixed many of the core needs that every American relies on to live, work, and succeed in the future. For UAW members, this legislation brings reliability and job opportunities by improving the current state of our roads, bridges, water, electric vehicle infrastructure, internet capacity, and electrical grid reliability. Ray goes on to say, we are also encouraged by passage of the procedural rules for the Build Back Better Act, and we now look forward to swift passage by the U.S. House of the Build Back Better Act, along with a provision that when paired with this infrastructure bill will ensure that consumer electric vehicle subsidies for new EV products will be made in the United States by workers who have good paying union jobs. Now, Josh is going to zero in on this because the last time we had the UAW on the show with Desiree Hoffman, she gave us a glimpse at what they were talking about. And Josh has some more details on this. I'm referring to a tax break. And he's going to break this down. Right now, if you purchase an electric vehicle, you get like a $7,500 credit. What the UAW wants to do is throw in another $500 for batteries that would be made in the United States by Union Brothers and Sisters, and another $4,500 if you purchase a vehicle made at a union shop. So you add all that up, we're talking serious money here. Over $12,000, $12,500, provided you buy a union EV vehicle. This is all legislation that's being discussed right now. So Josh is going to touch on that. And also, the other day, we were talking with Good Jobs First about Ford moving EV production to Memphis, Tennessee. And Tennessee is a right-to-work state. And there's been some concern about that. From what I understand, those will be union jobs, will stay union jobs. But you know how it is in some of these states. And you see a lot of southern states with the so-called transplants. You know, I'm talking about Toyota, Nissan, that are anti-union. So we'll touch on that as well with Josh Nassar. Story here about Starbucks I want to get into. We've been covering this story recently, and the latest is the efforts, the organizing efforts at three Starbucks stores. This is in the Buffalo area. Well, yesterday, the union petitioned the National Labor Relations Board to hold votes at three additional locations in its historic push to unionize the first Starbucks store in the country. Now, the filing comes on the heels of Starbucks' request that the NLRB delay the mailing of union ballots, as well as union accusations that Starbucks unlawfully threatened, intimidated, and surveilled employees during the union election campaign. Like I said the other day, this is one to watch because we're seeing, in fact, the CEO of Starbucks came in there, Howard Schultz, and tried to do one-on-one meetings with the workers, and they didn't buy it. So we'll see what happens at the Starbucks stores in the Buffalo area. All right, we have to break. When we come back, Arnold Scott on behalf of the American Federation of Government Employees.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number one. Welcome a good guy. He's been on the show many, many times, and he speaks on behalf of one of our great sponsors. I'm talking about the American Federation of Government Employees. His name is Arnold Scott. And he is AFGE's District 6 National President as part of the American Federation of Government Employees. AFGE.org is their website. Mr. Scott, welcome back to America's Workforce. How are we doing today, brother?
Well, I'm doing great, Flash. I'm glad to be here.
There's a couple of things I know you want to get into on the show about some significant victories this year. But I have to call attention to something that the Biden administration directed federal agencies to take concrete steps to help bolster union membership in the federal government. I, you know, when I when I saw, in fact, I got tipped off that this was going to happen. This was announced just a couple of weeks ago, and I'm thinking to myself, an administration, somebody in the White House, surrounded by key labor people like our labor secretary, Marty Walsh, coming out and saying, we have to do more for unions. We got to get more people signing up for various unions. Arnold, I mean, it's refreshing to me. It's got to be refreshing to you, especially since you represent so many people in the federal government. But I this is groundbreaking. I like to hear. Let's start right there. I like to start with good news. Sometimes the news isn't always good, but this is certainly very, very good news. So go ahead.
I'll tell you what, Flash, it was groundbreaking to me, too. You know, after having 4 years of somebody doing everything they could to try to destroy the union, to have a president who comes out and says that that recognizes that union is in the public interest and talks about unions growing instead of shrinking. I mean, that's just, it's amazing, and it's great working with this president.
This was all contained in an executive order, which highlights, and I'm taking this right from the order, benefits of union membership, including higher wages, more employer-provided benefits, a voice at work, and better job security. In fact, there's a comment here, and this is all posted on the website, afge.org. As the nation's largest employer, the federal government has the unique opportunity to lead by example and serve as a model employer by supporting the president's policy in Executive Order EO-14025 to encourage worker organizing and collective bargaining. The federal government is highlighting the positive impact that unions have in all workplaces. And that comes from the director of the Office of Personnel Management, and that's Kiran Ahuja. So this is certainly good news. And I would imagine the people around you equally surprised. Is that right, Arnold?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We were surprised that an administration would come out so strong and support of the union. But, I mean, it shouldn't have shocked us because I can tell you, President Biden, when he was a senator, he was supportive of AFG.
Yeah,
it's just nice having somebody that that supports what it is that the workers are trying to do.
Yeah, yeah. It's my understanding, too. Morale has definitely picked up, and there's more organizing, and we'll touch on that as well. But let's get into the victories this year. And there's a number of them, and it goes back to Biden rescinding some executive orders. Let's start there, Arnold. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, it's been great working with this president. And when you talk about the victories that we've had, you had President Biden rescinding the May 2018 executive orders where they attempted to eliminate the past administration attempted to eliminate collective bargaining and the due process for employees and the workplace representation rights of federal workers. I mean, it was a constant battle with this administration. We all remember the three executive orders that the Trump administration passed attempting to take away the rights of federal workers. That was one thing that he did. I mean, if you want to talk about something else that he did where AFG felt that it was a victory, for years we had the Federal Labor Relations Authority under the Trump administration for 4 years. There wasn't a general counsel. So anytime you filed an unfair labor practice against the agencies, there was nobody to process the unfair labor practices. And when he came in, he appointed a new acting general counsel, Charlotte Dry, at the Federal Labor Relations Authority, paving the way for the FLRA to address all the backlog in cases that was created by the Trump administration, and to prosecute the agencies that violated their own policies and labor laws. So that was a major accomplishment. I mean, even if you want to talk about, we all remember when Homeland Security was created, that they gave the TSA administrator the rights to determine what collective bargaining rights those employees had, made them second-class citizens. And, you know, AFG went in and talked with Secretary Mayorkas, who was appointed by Biden, and Secretary Mayorkas, he came out and he gave those TSA employees equivalent to Title V rights when he came in, which was something that those employees had been fighting for 20 years to do. And another thing that AFG is they reached an historic settlement with the Department of Veteran Affairs to restore the worker rights and overturn anti-worker policies implemented by the previous administration. And some of that, we remember, was when they took away Title 38 rights, which was a part of those executive orders that Trump did. I mean, it was numerous things that this administration has come in and done, you know, on behalf of federal workers, to make federal workers feel like they're wanted,
right,
instead of the enemy, like the past administration.
The sad part about what he did at the VA is the fact that there's a lot of vets working at the VA, and didn't a lot of them kind of were shuffled around or lost their jobs altogether? Didn't that happen?
Oh, yeah, some of that happened, too. I mean, it was just, he made it easier for employees to be fired for unjust causes. I mean, really.
Mm-hmm. And Arnold, going back to the TSA, the Transportation Security Agency, I recall when they created that agency, which was right after 9/11, weren't they not supposed to unionize? They had no rights to unionize at that time? Isn't that? And we're going back to, what, like 2002 or something like that, right?
Yeah, 2001. Yes, you're right. At that time, when the TSA administrator had the right to even determine what was grievable and what was not grievable, or whether they could even have a union, because in the beginning they didn't have a union.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to establish that they could have a union, and then there had to be an election ran for which union it was going to be.
Right.
And then after they determined what union it was going to be, then they sat down and negotiated the contract, and they said to the union, these are the things that we will negotiate over, and all this other stuff is off the table, which made these employees second-class citizens.
I see. Yeah, it was Obama who allowed them to organize, and they still had their hands tied, and now that's getting better. How is the morale? I want to zero in on the TSA, because this is a group that's gotten beaten up pretty well over the years. How are they doing, and especially now with air travel starting to pick up? What are you hearing, Arnold?
Well, I think they're doing better. But AFGE is still, I mean, even though Secretary Mayorkas has granted them the equivalency of Title V collective bargaining rights, we still need to get legislation passed to codify that, because once this administration goes out, another administration comes in, we don't want them to turn around and take away what they've been given.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
you pretty much want to get it in stone then, right?
Yeah, we want to get it in legislation and law.
Gotcha. There's a lot more we have to cover here. Arnold Scott is joining us. He is with AFGE District 6. He's a national vice president of the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE.org. There's a lot more we have to cover. We want to talk about what may happen next month in December. We're talking about a fiscal cliff, and there's some issues. In fact, 11 of them that the union wants to tackle for what's left of 2021 and what's going to happen in 2022. We'll be back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this upcoming segment is brought to you by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. Check them out online at oft-aft.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, we are available on 6 platforms now. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and most recently, the platform known as Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. And we always appreciate those 5-star ratings. Greatly appreciated, I might add. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Arnold Scott. He's a regular on the show. He's with District 6 of the American Federation of Government Employees as a national vice president. Now, that is, correct me here, Arnold, Ohio, Kentucky, and what else? What is District 6?
Indiana.
Indiana. Okay. Good territory there. And, Arnold, you want to talk about what's probably going to happen here. We're kind of like kicking the can down the road when it comes to raising the debt limit here. And, well, you guys went through that crazy government shutdown a couple of years ago, 35 days, the government shutdown.
Yeah.
So what are we planning for here? I hope that doesn't happen again, but I'm looking at the date of December 3rd. What's the story here, Arnold?
Well, I'm saying the same thing, Flash. I hope it doesn't happen again. And I know AFGE, we're working with Congress to see if Congress can't get together and pass legislation that would keep the country moving forward. You know, I mean, that, like you said, 35 days when the government was shut down under the Trump administration, I mean, that was a disaster for federal workers. And we don't want that to happen again. I know that they passed legislation last time that said that even if the government is shut down, once the government opens back up, the federal employees are paid. But, you know, federal employees live paycheck to paycheck. And, you know, if the government shut down for 30 days or 35 days, I mean, that's a hardship on federal workers. So we don't want that to happen. And we're trying to do everything we can to see if we can't get the Congress to come together and pass legislation to keep the government open and to raise the debt ceiling. I just think it's crazy that you got a group of people who, you know, passed all of this stuff under the Trump administration, and they benefited from all of the tax cuts and everything that they did. Now they don't want to pay for it. They don't want to raise the debt ceiling to pay for it. They were the ones who benefited from it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just crazy.
Yeah, under the previous administration, there was a lot of debt added. I want to say the number of like $8 trillion, something like that. It was monumental. It was monumental. And much of that came from the tax cuts, as you alluded to. So we're looking for some good legislation here. Now, I know you want to talk about appropriation bills. Is that where the pay raise is contained? I know you've been pushing for a pay raise because over the years, it wasn't very much. There was like 1%. They took it away. You had inflation. It was eaten up. Where do we stand with all that, Arnold?
No, the appropriation bill, Flash, that's where they fund the agencies, the various agencies, where they have to pass legislation, funding the 13 legislative bills that they have to pass for the various agencies. That's the appropriations bill. So we're trying to get them to do that, to pass those appropriations bill. But, you know, you raise an interesting issue when you talk about the pay raise. I mean, AFGE is going to be pushing for a 3.2% pay raise for federal workers. And that's because, you know, of all of the pay freezes that federal employees have taken and, you know, the insufficient wage increases that they got, where you had inflation that ate up, you know, anything that they got, where you, like the federal government, give you a 1% pay raise, those type things. And I mean, federal workers are cost of a loaf of bread is not the same this year as it was last year. I mean,
no.
We all know that things have went up. I mean, the cost of everything has went up. Look at the cost of gas right now just to go to work.
Right. Well, look at Social Security. They're giving Social Security recipients in 2022 just shy of 6%. So, you know, the 3.2 isn't asking for too much when you think about it, considering
what's going on. I don't think it's asking for too much.
No, not at all.
I think that federal workers deserve it.
Arnold, explain to me this equal locality pay. Equal locality pay. Apparently, there's different pay systems in the government. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, you have the GS pay system, and you also have the wage grade system. And what they're talking about is that you can have like one system may give it, like, let's say if you're in Indiana, may give a 3.2%, and the other system may give a 1%. And, you know, these people are working right together. Why would you have different percentages instead of one percentage? AFG is going to be working with Congress to see if we can't do something to equalize that and make it fair.
Right.
So that people aren't getting different pay raises. And then the other thing you have is, let's say you have an employee who works in one state and they're under one locality, and they TDY to another state, they under another locality, but they the same grade, but they making different money because of the locality pay.
I see.
So to me, it's just crazy.
Let's move on to this probationary period, and this is, I guess, exclusive to Department of Defense workers.
This is a biggie issue where DOD has they went to a 2-year probationary period instead of a 1-year probationary period. And what we're trying to do is get legislation to bring it back to a 1-year probationary period. I mean, in a year, if you hire an employee, in a year, you should be able to know whether you want to keep that employee or not.
I mean,
it shouldn't take you 2 years to do it. And the other issue that's mixed up in here is the misuse of temporary and term employees, where they keep them beyond the time that they're supposed to be on. So we want to try to see if we can't do something to get them to stop abusing the temporary and term use of employees.
So they keep them as temps so they don't have to pay the full benefits. Is that right?
They don't have to pay all the benefits, right.
There you go. Oh, yeah. That's pretty clever. A lot of businesses like to do that. Arnold, I want to get into privatization. This is a hot potato of a topic. You and I have discussed this over the years. And again, this is exclusive to the Department of Defense jobs. And there's so many people, many lawmakers that say, oh, we can do it better if we privatize, if we contract that out. We don't need those government employees. You know, and the taxpayers, here's the part they don't understand. They think that, oh, well, if they just contract that out, then that just comes out of the budget. No. I mean, they got to pay the contractor. It's still part of your tax dollar. And more often than not, they may do a low bid, and then later on they'll realize they can't sustain that bid, so they have to raise their rates. But talk to me about what's going on in the DOD right now.
Yeah, well, you hit it right on the head, you know, Flash, that and this has been a long-going issue within the Department of Defense, of where they've tried to privatize the work, and they always start out saying that it's going to be a savings to the taxpayer, but in the end, the taxpayers wind up paying 2 to 3 times what the in-house bid was, and it doesn't save the taxpayers money. It costs them more money. And so AFGE is, we're always fighting that issue and working on that issue to try to keep people from abusing the privatization. So, I mean, we're going to be working that issue just like we always do.
Arnold, let's move on to law enforcement officer retirement benefits. This is kind of interesting because it goes beyond the DOD. We're talking about the VA, the Federal Protective Service. And what's the story here? Like, can you explain what's going on here?
Well, the thing is that you have one retirement system for law enforcement officers, what they call law enforcement, but then you have another retirement system for like DOD police, VA police, and the Federal Protective Services. And what we're saying is it's all law enforcement. So we're going to be working on legislation that will give all federal law enforcement the same retirement system, so that you don't have one group getting one thing and another group getting another thing. So,
gotcha.
That's what that issue is.
Arnold, I got one more we can discuss before we wrap it up, and this concerns all Americans in the country today. Voting rights. We're seeing more and more states clamping down, making it more restrictive to vote. And it should be the other way around. We should promote voting in this country, not do the opposite. And there's a lot of people that still think the last election was stolen. I'm not going to get into that. But talk to me about legislation. I know they've introduced a couple of bills, and it's tough to move on these bills on the federal level. The states are doing everything they can to tie our hands, but where's AFGE on this, Arnold?
Well, I can tell you AFGE is supportive of any legislation that is going to do is going to stop these various states from passing these crazy laws to try to stop people from voting. I mean, AFGE is working with Congress to pass legislation to protect the rights of all voters, all Americans, and to reverse the actions the states have taken to make it harder for Americans to vote. I mean, here in the United States, voting is a constitutional right, and it's just crazy what they're trying to do. I mean, it's easier for you to get driver's license than it is to vote. I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, instead of trying to make it easier, they're doing everything they can to put up roadblocks to make it harder for people to, especially minorities, to get out and vote.
Yep.
I think back when I was doing an election in Ohio, and I was thinking about the voting machines. And, you know, they had all kind of voting machines that was in the headquarters, but when you went into the areas where the minorities was, the lines was out, I mean, was down the street, and then you went into the rich areas and stuff. I mean, there was no lines or anything, but they had the machines. They just wouldn't put them in so that people could vote. It's just crazy, the stuff that they do.
Arnold, if that's not discrimination, I don't know what is. What you just said on the air. Yeah, yeah. That's clear discrimination. It really is. We're going to leave it on that note. Arnold, always a pleasure to have you on the show here. Arnold Scott, he is with District 6, AFGE's National Vice President. District 6 includes all of Ohio, all of Indiana, and all of Kentucky. How many workers are we talking about in those three states, Arnold?
We're talking about probably 30,000.
30,000. Okay. Well, I'm going to let you go. Biden says more people have to unionize in the federal government, so you get back to work, okay?
I'll tell you what. I'm going to be out there doing everything I can to sign them up and bring them into the union.
I hear you, brother. You take care, stay safe, and we'll talk down the road, okay?
All right, brother. You too.
And once again, Arnold Scott, who is the District 6 National Vice President of the American Federation of Government Employees. And District 6 covers Ohio, Indiana, and Kentucky. A lot of members there. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Josh Nassar on behalf of the United Auto Workers.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle at AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two. Welcome back to the show. One of our regulars, also a proud sponsor, one of many of America's workforce. That would be Josh Nasser, who is the legislative coordinator for the United Auto Workers, UAW.org. You can also check them out on Facebook, UAW.union, and follow them on Twitter at UAW. Well, as you know, we got some good news. Last Friday night, Congress passing the infrastructure bill. That's the bipartisan legislation which passed in the Senate a couple months back. We finally got approval in the House, just awaiting Biden's signature, which I understand should come next week. Josh Nasser, this has to be a pretty good day at the UAW. How you feeling today?
Good. I mean, the reality is that, you know, we have just fallen behind in dealing with our infrastructure, our water system, you know, all kinds of things for many, many decades. So, you know, a really important step was taken by this new you know, infrastructure law coming into effect.
And I know this was kind of held up in the House because they were trying to tack this on to the reconciliation bill, which is also known as the Build Back Better Act. And I know there's an issue with money, and it seems like the fight is among the Democrats on that. And I know you work the Hill. Why don't you tell me, give me a little rundown of what's been going on, because I know your head has been spinning on this. So go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, this is basically legislation that would address so many longstanding problems, whether you're talking about people in states where the governors have not expanded Medicaid, making sure those folks get health care, whether it's making sure that there's a child care, pre-K, you know, coverage for families, you know, stuff around electric vehicles, which I'll get into in a minute. And also, you know, reversing many bad tax policies. All of these have been in play, and there's differences, you know, within the Democratic caucus. I think one of the reasons why it's so difficult is because the Democrats have very slim majorities, and the Republicans as a party have just decided to not engage in the process, and they're just kind of opposing Build Back Better outright from the start. So that you know, that leaves a smaller pool of people negotiating. Mm-hmm. And also the bill will be passed, you know, we're hoping, you know, into law through budget reconciliation, which is a process that is used to avoid a filibuster. But the downside is there's limitations to what you can put into a bill that's passed via these special rules, because everything has to pertain to spending money or raising money. So, for example, we advocated for raising the minimum wage in a bill this spring that was passed through reconciliation, and that didn't work. The parliamentarian ruled against it. So there's some limitations, but if we can get this done, we're talking about, you know, meaningful price controls on pharmaceutical drugs. We're talking about, for the first time, having it so people actually are given an incentive to buy union-made products, automobiles to be specifically. The way the EV tax credit is structured, consumers would get an extra $4,500 if they bought a union-made vehicle. The way it works now is people can get an EV electric vehicle, you know, from anywhere, built by anyone, and it doesn't affect the actual credit. In other words, it's not taken into account, you know, the working conditions. This would change that and turn it on its head and, frankly, create a level playing field, because many companies that are anti-union, you know, are use that as a competitive advantage, you know, the fact that they're using temps and lower lower wages and have fewer benefits. So in our view, it really go a step in the right directions towards raising working standards instead of lowering them, mm-hmm. which would be obviously, you know, long overdue change.
So right now, let's just take this apart a little bit. You can get a tax credit for an electric vehicle. Is it $4,500? Explain that part to me, because I know part of this is contained in the reconciliation bill, which you pointed out. But I need you to kind of tear that apart so I can clearly understand what's going on here.
Sure. So the way it currently works under current law is if you get an electric vehicle, it's $7,500 credit.
Okay.
And that's at the end of the year, you know, your taxes. This would change that so you could actually get that discount when you're buying the car at the point of sale.
Okay.
So that's one change. Another change is that after 5 years, only U.S.-made cars will be eligible for that $7,500. So in you know, 6 years from now, vehicles being brought in from Mexico and China would not get that taxpayer relief, essentially. And plus, there's a $500 extra bonus if you're getting a battery made in the United States. In addition to the $500 for a U.S.-made battery, which is really important to do, there's a $4,500 additional tax credit that, again, you can get at the point of sale when you're buying the vehicle if it's a U.S. Union-made. So when you combine it together, everything, it could be $12,500 if you're getting a U.S.-made vehicle, Union-made vehicle with a U.S. battery. But if you're buying an electric vehicle that's not Union-made, that doesn't have the battery, and is built in the U.S., it's $7,500 that one would be eligible for.
So it would really be
a game changer in the electric vehicle industry.
So you add it all up, you're talking $5,000 extra. That's all good. And just to be clear here, that has to go in the Build Back Better then, the reconciliation package, right?
That's correct. That is not in the new infrastructure law. So this is in Build Back Better, which, you know, we're hopeful will pass Congress before Thanksgiving.
Gotcha. Josh, I have to ask you, I noticed Ford is getting a big presence in some of the southern states, like the right-to-work states, Tennessee for one. I'm just wondering, those are going to be union facilities, right, even though they're working in those right-to-work states?
So the story is that if it's a facility that falls under a master contract for all of us, for all of, you know, Ford, GM, and Stellantis, formerly Fiat Chrysler, the way it works is it's the same working conditions across the country, so it doesn't necessarily differ by state. As far as the specifics on the new expansion, you know, that's a little bit of a work in progress. I'm not 100% sure how that's going to that's what I iron out, but certainly, you know, it's our expectation that those will be good union jobs.
Gotcha. Josh, I noticed this in the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which is the legislation which passed on Friday. They did make an allotment for electric vehicle infrastructure. Now, that would be the charging stations, right? So they got to get the charging stations down, and hopefully the electric vehicles will follow, right?
Yeah, so that's correct. It has funds for charging stations. There's really three components. One is you got to lower the price and have the make it affordable to consumers. That's why the tax credit comes in.
Uh-huh.
Number two is that we need to have the charging stations so there's, you know, people can drive them everywhere and there's this comfort level. That's important. And the third is that we really need to make sure that we're having incentives for having the supply chain, the battery manufacturing, et cetera, here, and for the retooling. And I want to point out that China and the European Union have poured, you know, untold billions into their own industries to increase the use of electric vehicles, and we have not done the same. So that's one of the reasons we've been falling behind. And, you know, this is a global competition. So if we're not competing, we're eventually going to lose. So it's really key that we do this for not just now, but the future.
So how do you feel about the reconciliation package moving forward? Because this has been tough. And I know, like I said, they wanted to bundle them together. It just wasn't going anywhere. But now that we got part one done, and I'm hearing they want to get something done by Thanksgiving, I don't know if they're overly optimistic, but you're the one that's working on the Hill over there. What do you think?
I think that is realistic. I think, I mean, it's no guarantee, but I think it is a realistic expectation to get this done by Thanksgiving, right up to Thanksgiving, not way before. But, you know, frankly, there is such pent-up needs, you know, in combined, if you look at the Congresses over the past decades, last, you know, administration, there are so many needs, whether it's reducing health care costs, whether it's helping people afford child care, reducing the cost of medicine, that have just not been addressed, reversing bad tax laws. So, yes, there are certainly things in this negotiation that we had hoped would be included and are not no longer included. There's no question about that. But we got to measure this not from everything we hoped for, but from everything from where we are today. And the reality is that the way the legislation looks right now, it increases fines for union busters. Mm-hmm. It helps write off portion of the of one's union dues, which a person can't do now and has not been able to do since the passage of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act in 2017, the Republican tax law. So there's a lot of really important milestones and improvements here that put us on the right path. Doesn't mean everything has been done, that our work is done. Certainly not. It's really critical. You know, we passed labor law reform, and there's many other things that need to happen to have a stronger middle class and a fairer economy. But it's definitely would be a major step in the right direction.
So what you just brought up about labor law reform, those are some of the components of the PRO Act, right? The Protect the Right to Organize Act?
Yes. But, you know, the frustration is that because of the rules of budget reconciliation, you know, there's a lot of stuff that was left on the cutting room floor that was not able to make it just because of the rules, which brings up the filibuster, because the filibuster is still a huge impediment. And it's standing in the way of labor law reform. It's standing in the way of restoring and ensuring people have the right to vote, frankly. So that's another battle that really needs to be engaged in, soon, very soon.
Yeah, I feel bad for Biden. I mean, he's got great intentions. Unfortunately, there's infighting in his own party. And, I mean, it's just like everything's coming after him right now. But and it's having an effect. I mean, his numbers are dropping. His popularity is dropping. But, you know, I look at it one step at a time. You know, this is not an easy process. And I think when we start getting some victories behind us, like what we just did last week and hopefully in the next couple of weeks, probably should be turning around, don't you think?
Yeah, and there's also, of course, just the Delta and the spike in COVID, certainly doesn't creates a lot of frustration among the American people, which is certainly understandable.
Yeah.
The supply chain problems, all things that were not, you know, caused by the administration's policies by any means. But as the president, it's had an impact on him. But yeah, in politics, a month is a lifetime. So I think it's important to focus on, you know, what could be done to really improve the law for working people and our country, make our country stronger. And, you know, then hope that, those results, really impact the future and kind of what happens down the road as far as who's elected. So, as you said, it is one step at a time, and it is very difficult. If it was easy, it all would have been done a long time ago.
You got it. All right, Josh, we're going to leave it on that note. Josh Nasser, legislative coordinator for the UAW, proud sponsor of America's Workforce. UAW.org is a website. You take care, stay safe, and hopefully next time we have this conversation, which will be in December, we'll have some more legislation we could talk about. How's that sound?
I'd love to discuss some new laws in December. So absolutely.
Okay,
and,
funny.
And happy holidays to everyone too, okay?
You got it. You take care. Josh Nasser on our live line. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, we got the United Association Vets in Piping Program and Rhode Island Building Futures. Until then, all of you, have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.